the Schubert Theater. This musical is based on an old English legend about a mad barber who slits the throats of his clients. In Sweeney Todd, this is because of revenge that the barber Sweeney Todd seeks against a judge who once unjustifiably sentenced him to life and then raped his wife. And in this lust for revenge and in his thwarted attempts for revenge, he starts slitting the throats of many others and with an accomplice bakes these people into pies. Well, more about this story and the legend behind it in a little while, but let's listen now to some of the cast recording, the original cast recording, and some of the cast members have changed since this time, the original cast recording of Sweeney Todd. And we enter in this recording when Mrs. Lovett, who is the meat pie baker, is introduced to Sweeney Todd, who has just stopped in to her shop, and she sings to him about the pies, the meat pies that she bakes.
A customer! What? What you rush? What you hurry? You gave me such a fright, I thought you was a ghost. Half a minute, can't you sit? Sit you down, sit. All I meant is that I haven't seen a customer for weeks. Did you come in for a pie, sir? Do forgive me if me head's a little fake. Ugh, what is that? But you think we are the plague? From the way that people keep affording, no you don't. Heaven knows I try, sir. Ugh, but there's no one comes in even to inhale. Right you are, sir, would you like a drop of ale? Mind you, I can't hardly blame them. These are probably the worst pies in London. I know why nobody cares to take them. I should know, I make them, but good now, the worst pies in London. Even that's polite, the worst pies in London. If you doubt it, take a bite. Is that just disgusting? You have to concede it. It's nothing but grasping. You drink this, you'll need it. The worst pies in London. And no wonder with the price of meat what it is. When you get it, never thought I'd live to see the day. Men would think it was a treat, finding poor animals what are dying in the street. Mrs. Mooney has a pie shop, does a business, but I've noticed something weird. Lately all her neighbours' cats have disappeared. Have to hand it to her, what I call enterprise. Popping pussies into pies wouldn't do in my shop. Just the thought of it's enough to make you sick. And I'm telling you, them pussycats is quick. Now denying times is hard, sir. Even harder than the worst pies in London. Only lard and nothing more is than just revolting. All greasy and gritty. It looks like it's melting and tastes like, well, pity a woman alone with limited wind. And the worst pies in London. Ah, sir, times is hard, times is hard.
Isn't that a room up there over the pie shop? If times are so hard, why don't you rent it out? That should bring in something.
Up there? Oh, no one'll go near it. People think it's haunted. You see, years ago, something happened up there. Something not very nice. There was a barber and his wife, and he was beautiful. A proper artist with a knife, but they transported him for life, and he was beautiful. Barker, his name was Benjamin Barker.
Transported? What was his crime?
Foolishness. He had this wife, you see. Pretty little thing, silly little nit, had a chance for the moon on a string. Poor thing. Wanted a like mad, one of them a judge, t'other one his beadle. Every day they'd nudge and they'd wheedle, but she wouldn't budge from her needle. Too bad, pure thing. So they merely shipped the poor blighter off, some they did, leaving her with nothing but grief. but there was worse yet to come. Poor thing. Joanna. That was the child's name. Pretty little Joanna.
Go on.
Ma, you do like a good story, don't you? Well, Beadle calls on her all polite. Poor thing, poor thing. The judge, he tells her he's all contrite. He blames himself for a dreadful plight. She must come straight to his house tonight. Poor thing, poor thing. No one she knows, their poor dear, poor thing. She wanders tormented and drinks, poor thing. The judge has repented, she thinks, poor thing. Oh, where is Judge Turpin, she asks. He was there all right, only not so contrite. She wasn't no match for such craft, you see, and everyone thought it so droll. They figured she had to be daft, you see, so all of them stood there and laughed, you see. Poor soul, poor thing.
No! Would no one have mercy on her?
So it is you, Benjamin Barker. Them handles is chased silver, ain't they?
Silver, yes. These are my friends. See how they glisten. See this one shine. How he smiles in the light. My friend, my faithful friend. Speak to me, friend. Whisper, I'll listen. I know you've been locked out of sight all these years. Like me, my friend. Well, I've come home. Come, let
Mr.
me hold you.
If you only knew,
now with
Mr.
a
Todd.
Sigh,
ooh, Mr. Todd,
you
go
warm in my hand, my friend,
you come home.
My clever friend.
I always had a fondness for you, I did.
Rest now, my friend.
Never you hear,
soon
Mr.
I'll
Todd.
Unfold.
You can move in here, Mr. Todd.
Splendors you never have dreamed of. Your
days,
my lucky friend,
and your friend,
dim though
your shine
was merely silver.
Silver's good enough for
friends,
me,
you shall drip rubies, you'll soon drip precious. At last, my arm is complete again.
Lift your razor high, speeding, hear it singing, yes. Sinking in the rosy skin of righteousness.
His voice was soft, his manner mild.
He's so
them laugh when he often smiled.
He'd seen how civilized men behaved. He never forgot and he never forgave.
Not Sweeney, not Sweetheart.
The demon barber of Fleet Street.
We're going to leave the original cast recording of Sweeney Todd so that we can speak now with the star of Sweeney Todd, Angela Lansbury, who's my very special guest on Fresh Air. Sweeney Todd opened last night in Philadelphia at the Schubert Theater. Angela Lansbury stars in the role of Mrs. Lovett. She won a Tony for her performance in Sweeney Todd. This extraordinary musical was showered with Oscars, with Tonys, I should say, the year it opened. With music and libretto by Stephen Sondheim, Sweeney Todd is both menacing and exhilarating. Let me tell you a little bit about the storyline, which you might have picked up through listening to the cast album. Sweeney Todd is a barber who returns to London after having escaped from life imprisonment in jail. He had been married to a beautiful young woman. The lecherous judge, struck by her beauty, gets Sweeney out of the way by sentencing him to life on trumped-up charges. After raping his wife, the judge keeps Sweeney's daughter as his ward. When Sweeney returns, the ambition is to kill this judge. The tools of his trade, his razors, become the weapons for revenge. But after missing his opportunity to slit the judge's throat, he decides to practice on less honorable throats. His companion, Mrs. Lovett, the meat pie baker, comes up with the economical idea of grinding the victims into meat pies. Sweeney becomes known as the demon barber of Fleet Street. Mrs. Lovett's pies are a big hit. Like in the Threepenny Opera, there's social commentary behind the meanness. Sweeney Todd sees the world divided into two, into those who eat and those who get eaten. And at one point, he sings these lines that I'd just like to quote to give you a sense of this. There are two kinds of men and only two. There's the one staying put in his proper place and the one with his foot in the other one's face. Look at me, Mrs. Lovett. Look at you. No, we all deserve to die. I tell you why, Mrs. Lovett. Tell you why. Because the lives of the wicked should be made brief. For the rest of us, death will be a relief. We all deserve to die. Well, that's all about the story I'll tell you. leave the rest when you see the show. Sweeney Todd is a continuation of Angela Lansbury's work with Stephen Sondheim. She made her Broadway musical debut in his Anyone Can Whistle and starred as Rose in the London production of Gypsy, music by Julie Stein, lyrics by Stephen Sondheim. She won a Tony when she performed the role in America. Another Tony was won for her performance in the leading role in Jerry Herman's musical Mame. Her films include The Picture of Dorian Gray, Dark at the Top of the Stairs, The Manchurian Candidate, and Death on the Nile. First film appearance was in Gaslight, which starred Ingrid Bergman. Angela Lansbury was 17 at the time. Welcome to Fresh Air. I can't tell you how much I enjoyed your performance, and it's a great honor to meet you this afternoon.
Thank you very much.
Let me ask you, what excites you about Sweeney Todd? I can tell from your performance and by the fact that you're touring with the company that you feel very strongly about it. I'd like to know a little bit about why you feel strongly about it as an actress within it, and then standing outside of it, what you think some of its important contributions to musical theater are.
Well, I think from my own point of view as an actress, this particular role of Nellie Lovett afforded me an opportunity to embark upon a kind of singing role that I probably would never have had an opportunity to do. In other words, I'm playing a role which is probably as close to opera as I'm ever going to get. Being a music lover, as Mrs. Lovett says to the Beadle at one point, she says, "My goodness, I never knew you was a music lover." Well, basically, I am an actress, but I am also, I have a huge underlay of musical yearning in me, which has always come up trumps, actually, along the way, thank goodness. It's served me well. My understanding of music, my sense of rhythm, my sense of pitch, all of those sort of tools of the singer's trade. Finally, I have come to a point now, so in this role, I'm using every bit of knowledge that I know about music and singing. I am limited, certainly. I don't have a great opera voice, but I have a very useful kind of voice in that it's has a tremendous stretch to it, and it puts up with a great deal of punishment. So my own feeling about playing Mrs. Lovett, the technical aspects of it, I'm getting to do things that I've never done before, so that makes it, A, super delightful to be involved in 7 performances a week. Now, this was a 2-part question, and you're going to have to remind me what the first part was.
Well, that was the first part, and the second part
was... That was the first part, the second part was...
What do you think are some of the contributions that the musical is making to musical theatre? Because I think
indeed.
It's a very innovative piece.
Oh, absolutely. There's no question about it. It wasn't, of course, until we had the entire show put together that one realised exactly what it represented as a huge step forward as far as the musical theatre is concerned. It is musical theatre. It's not musical comedy, although it has a great deal of comedy in it. It has a tremendous amount of passion, tragedy, humour. It has so many parts to it. And I do think that the whole adds up to tremendous entertainment, even though I think some portion of the audience might say, well, this isn't what I thought I was going to see. I think in most instances, 9 times out of 10, they will come away having felt, no, it wasn't what I thought I was going to see, but gosh, I was vastly entertained. It was original, and I enjoyed myself, and I'm glad I went. And it's different, but it is still musical theatre.
It's very exhilarating.
Yes,
it's heady
stuff.
I found myself just really... just sitting up really straight just so I can see as much as I could, being short, you got her. But I was really at the edge of my seat for the
Well, that's
the
good.
Whole production.
That's good. If a show reaches out and grabs you, the audience, to that extent, then I feel that you've sort of had your money's worth, in a sense, because you've been plucked out of your own milieu and sort of transported, as it were, for a time.
This is the third musical that Stephen Sondheim had a contribution to. Of course, he wrote this, but he did the lyrics for Gypsy, which you starred in.
Yes, it's the third time I've worked with him, actually.
How does he contact you when he wants you to be in one of his shows? What did he do for Sweeney Todd?
Well, of course, he was part of a triumvirate, really. The other 2 parts being Hal Prince, the director, who is his friend and collaborator, really, in a sense, because they've worked together, they're great friends, and they have done so many shows together, you know, Company Follies, Pacific Overtures, this, many shows coming up in the future. Therefore, they work together like ham and cheese, in a sense, so you have that very strong collaboration. And the third member, of course, was Hugh Wheeler, who started out as the book writer, the librettist, except that he and Stephen also worked so closely together that Steve took a great deal of Hugh's work and embodied it in the songs and in the lyrics. So it's really a trio of people who approached me in conjunction with a producer. Now, you might think that Stephen Sondheim might have picked up the phone or written me a note and said, I'm going to compose a show, which is built around the legend of Sweeney Todd, would you be interested in playing Mrs. Lovett? Well, he did not. The producer did that. I was approached through the producer, who was Richard Barr and Charles Woodward, 2 producers in this instance. And but Steve, of course, the decision to get in touch with me was arrived at in concert, obviously, by all those gentlemen, you know, and they decided really the ideal person might be me to do this role.
I wonder what the first things were they told you about it to explain what the show would be like.
Well, they took it for granted that I knew the legend because coming from England originally, I know all about Sweeney Todd. When I say I know all about Sweeney Todd, I know that he was almost a grand guignol character that was sung about, and little doggerel rhymes were written about, you know, Sweeney Todd'll get you if you don't watch out. He's a character almost like Jack the Ripper in English folklore. And he turns up and people quote his name all the time. And he is also written into several very melodramatic types of almost grand guignol one-actors that actors used to go out on the road with in the turn of the century. So he's a very well-known name and character in theatrical folklore. So I knew about Sweeney Todd. I didn't know much about Mrs. Lovett, however. And so when they said Sweeney Todd, I said, well, that sounds very fascinating. How much does Mrs. Lovett have to do in the plot? Because, you know, if I'm going to get involved in a project as vast as this, I'd like to feel that I was going to be doing something that was going to be meaningful and important in the piece. And they assured me that she was his cohort and that she was the instigator in many instances and in a lot of the plot moves. And so obviously it was going to be an important role, which I would enjoy playing and could give my all to, which I have certainly enjoyed doing.
What did they tell you about the music?
Not too much. You see, Stephen always writes music now. In other words, this is music that Stephen is writing today, 1980. It's not particularly old-fashioned music. It doesn't sound like music of another era particularly, does it?
Well, I'll tell you, when I was driving, I saw it last night, when I was driving home, honestly, the whole time I was driving home, I was just going through the songs that I could summon up, because although they're unlike songs from other musicals that you'd walk out singing, you walk out singing them. They're very gripping melodies. But it was dawning on me that particularly the chorus song, the one where I'll tell you the legend of Sweeney Todd, it reminded me of like a Buccaneer song or an English ballad or something, in the sense that it tells the story. And there's something even about the way the lyrics are written that reminded me of a 19th century a ballad that tells a story. But of course, musically, it's extremely different from that. And there's a very funny moment too, where the Beatle comes in, and who's a very evil character in this, and sits down at the little organ and sings this tie-dye diddle ole about a lass and a lad kind of song that's also out of the period. So I really feel that he worked very much with the period, but lifted it right out of the period into an extremely contemporary form.
I think you're
music.
Right. He does in places. He does in the parlor songs. He wrote a whole suite of parlor songs, which all had to do with a row-dow-diddle-dow-day, with a row-dow-diddle-dow-dee, you see, which he got terribly enmeshed in. And we all sang them, and they were cut out, actually, finally. And Jack Eric Williams, who played the original Beatle in New York, he did sing quite a bit more of the parlor songs. We had one called About Bells, all about ding dong, ding dong, ding dong. It was one of the parlor songs, isn't it? But it took up much too much time, and Steve and Hal decided to cut it out, which they did with the London production. And then when we set the national company, those songs were deleted. But they certainly had a flavor. They did. And when I say that Steve's music is now, I wasn't really being truthful in a sense, because as you say, he has lifted a style out of a past time and used it very effectively. I think what I'm meaning is that he almost uses a rock beat in the young Antony's song with Joanna. He uses a barcarolle for me when I'm singing Wait. You know, I mean, he's got all sorts of rhythms and things going, and his choices are very interesting and eclectic in a sense, because he never gets bogged down into any one thing. And a lot of people say that Steve has lifted from a lot of other composers, like Brecht and Britten and so on, why wouldn't anyone? I mean, today we all have ears and we all digest things, we ingest them, digest them, and obviously we turn around and we'll reproduce something which will be evocative of another composer, but it isn't done purposely and it isn't copying or anything like that. It's just something that is around us all, you know.
Is he the kind of composer who will sit down at the piano with you and sing his songs for you to give you an idea of what he had in his mind?
Absolutely. Steve always auditions all his own work. And the thing he loves to do when he has a new song, he wants you to come over and hear it. And he'll when he's got a few, he'll say, come on over, I want to play you the song that I've written for you in such and such a place in the script. And, you know, I'll pop over to his house and he'll sit down at the piano and he'll sing the song. He auditions his own shows, and he doesn't have somebody else sing the songs, he sings them. He kills himself laughing when he was playing The Worst Pies in London. Can you imagine trying to play that and make all the sound effects and, you know, all the beats and so on, which are done with the dough and the rolling pin and all of that? He'd worked it all out. Every piece of business in that song Steve had written, it was right there on the music. She swaps the fly, she hits the dough, she pops her mouth or whatever she does, you know, at that moment.
So there are definitely musical reasons why a swat is put in a certain place.
Absolutely, yes.
So does he have a good voice when he sings these songs?
Not particularly, no, not at all. But he has a serviceable voice, and it isn't a bad voice. It's fine, but it's not a singer's voice at all.
What did he tell you about the character, Mrs. Lovett?
He didn't tell me anything about her. It wasn't really his department to tell me about Mrs. Lovett. He leaves that to me to find out from the script about Mrs. Lovett. I think that I found out most about Mrs. Lovett from the original book of the show, which was written by Hugh Wheeler. It was adapted from the English show, which was written by Christopher Bond, and was produced back in, I think, about 1974, which incidentally was the first time that Steve and Hal both saw Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street in London. They saw this particular adaptation that Christopher Bond did, and it was from that, it was on the foundation of that, they built our show. Steve was just fascinated by it. He felt it was wonderful subject matter to write a musical piece on. I think Hal was less enthusiastic at that point in time. However, he came around to it. Steve worked on him and worked on him and finally said, Hal said, well, all right, I'm ready. I'll do it. We'll do it, you know. And they got producers, who was Barr and Woodward, and then they proceeded to gather around. And all this took about 3 years. It took quite a long time. I didn't come into it till the last 6 months.
As we've mentioned before, this is the third production you'd work with, which Stephen Sondheim was involved with. Do you feel like you've learned anything from
a tremendous
his
amount.
Instruction or lyric writing?
Yes, a great deal. I've learned how to deliver a song and for the words to be understood, because he absolutely insists on it, and he knows exactly how he wants the song to be. It isn't that he tries to invoke his style on you or a style. It's simply that he wants certain musical details to be attended to. He wants you to breathe in certain places, and he's very explicit, very understanding, but nevertheless he would like you to do it a certain way.
Well, let's pause from our conversation for a moment to listen to your singing as featured on the original cast recording of Sweeney Todd. My guest is Angela Lansbury. What we're going to hear now is Wait, which, should we tell what the context of the song is for this?
Yes, it comes at a moment. It's a song that I felt difficult about singing, I must tell you that, and I think it's rather interesting because it's a song I said, why don't you cut this song, you know? What does it mean here? It seems so curious to go into this rather easygoing kind of song at this very tense moment. But no, they didn't feel that, and I've since learned to feel comfortable singing it. It comes at a moment when Sweeney Todd is terribly impatient to get going, to find the judge who ran off with his wife, and to kill him. And I'm saying, look, don't be in a hurry, we've got plenty of time. Bide your time, find your moment, and when it's right, you'll know it, and you'll get him. But just quieten down, sit down, relax, listen to me. You know, that's what this song is about.
Okay, so this is Angela Lansbury singing Wait, but this opens with some of the chorus singing about Sweeney Todd, and the chorus sings the story of Sweeney Todd in and out of the whole production.
Sweeney Todd. Sweeney pondered and Sweeney planned, like a perfect machine he planned.
Barbing the hook, baiting the trap, setting it down for the beetle to snap.
Slyly caught it up, Sweeney did, set a sort of machine he did. Laying the trail, showing the traces, letting it lead to fireplaces.
Sweeney pondered and Sweeney did, set a sort of machine he did.
Bamford come. Before the week is out, that's what he said.
And who says the week is out yet? It's only Tuesday.
Ah.
Easy now. Hush, love, hush. Don't distress yourself. What's your rush? Keep your thoughts nice and lush. Wait. Hush, love, hush. Think it through. Once it bubbles, then what to do? Watch it close, let it brew. Wait. I've been thinking flowers, maybe daisies, to brighten up the room. Don't you think some flowers, pretty daisies, might relieve the gloom? Wait, love, wait.
And what about the judge? When will I get to him?
Oh, can't you think of nothing else? Always brooding on your wrongs, what happened heaven knows how many years ago. Slow, love, slow, time so fast, now goes quickly, see now it's past. Soon will come, soon will last. Don't you know, silly man, half the fun is to plan a plan. All good things come to those who can wait. Gillyflowers maybe, instead of daisies. I don't know though, what do you think? Gillyflowers, I'd say. Nothing like a nice bowl of gillies.
Angela Lansbury singing Wait from the original cast recording of Sweeney Todd. Angela Lansbury is my guest, and Sweeney Todd is now being performed at the Schubert Theater in Philadelphia. As you were explaining before we heard that, this song, which is a a lovely song about patience mm-hmm. and waiting for the right moment, is sung by you to the Sweeney Todd character, urging him to wait for the right moment to slit this man's throat.
Exactly.
And there's a number of songs in the show that if you heard them out of context, you'd think that they're about something very pleasant, and in the show they're ugly. Like he sings a song called Friends, and mm-hmm. and you'd think if you heard it out of context that it's a mm-hmm. wonderful inspirational song about the value yes. of friendship. He's singing it to his newly rediscovered razors,
that's right.
which are going to be his tools of revenge. There's a song called Beautiful Women.
Pretty Women.
Mm. Pretty Women.
And yeah, lovely, lovely song.
Beautiful song, but because of yes. its context, it has some yes. very vicious overtones to it
oh,
in
absolutely.
A way. But yeah. I can almost imagine someone singing it on the next Miss America pageant, you know.
Yes.
But are you aware, is that important for you to work against when you're singing a song whose meaning is definitely working against the context that it's sung in, that there's that tension between the lyrics and the context?
I think the tension is automatically created when you're singing, as you said, in opposition to what you're doing. In other words, you're singing about something which, to all intents and purposes, seems perfectly normal and natural, and yet, in fact, you're engaged in murky doings. Steve has obviously latched onto this idea, and he has often done it, I think, particularly in rather sophisticated shows like Company, for instance. I think that was full of that kind of thing, you know. People getting caught in very ordinary dramatic situations, such as getting married, you know, and singing about getting, singing against it. He seems to enjoy showing both sides of the coin, and providing the character with an extraordinary piece of material to perform while doing something really quite ordinary and simple.
I want to talk with
Seems
you.
Seems to make him laugh.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk with you about the character that you play. Now, you had said that that finding the character was left completely to you, and you went mm-hmm. back to books written about Sweeney Todd in the original book to find out a little more about the character. Now, you manage in the production to convey simultaneously meanness and humor, an ability to be murderous with an ability to be extremely warm and friendly and huggable, mm-hmm. lovable, and you have the audience on your side as you're participating yes. in these murders. What are some of the ways do you feel that you're able to convey all of that and have the audience with you like that?
I think it's because of a rather deep understanding in my part. Having come from a London background, having read a lot of Dickens, having admired a lot of Hogarth prints, having read in my youth a good deal of English literature of that period, and having witnessed English pantomime. Now, pantomime is a convention of English theatre, musical theatre, that only happens at Christmas time. It's hardly known in America. But if I told you that in pantomime, people are not dumb, they are talking, and part of the convention of the pantomime is that the principal boy character in the pantomime is always played by a girl. The most beautiful young ingenue of the year plays the pantomime at Christmas. And the main character woman is always played by a man, the main comedian. So it goes back, I think, to sort of commedia dell'arte and the strolling players and mummers. You're having a parade quite soon, so you know what I mean. In those days in England, back in the 17th, 18th century, we used to travel around the countryside and literally act on the back of carts, with horse-drawn carts and caravans. And the men were always played by women and vice versa. Now, Mrs. Lovett is really a conglomerate of all of that knowledge that I have of English theatre going way, way back. She is almost a choreographed character. She is so broad in her scope. The idea is that she can do anything. She can slit your throat and you will love her as she's doing it, because she does it with such a total childlike joy and amorality that anything goes. Now, this is everybody's dream of a companion, somebody who will adapt instantly to anything you would like to expect from her at that moment. Now, that's what we all long for. Sweeney Todd, lucky devil, found the very one. Now, occasionally she goes off on her own little tangent, such as when she confides to him that her dream in life is really to retire by the seaside. But if she didn't, and if he didn't provide her with the little house by the sea, she would still do anything in the world that he wanted. Why? Because she absolutely adores him, and always did. Now, these are all the things that I know about Mrs. Lovett. I have to try and sell you on the fact that that this is the case about this old bag lady. But I do understand these things about her, and so that is what I am playing all the time. Absolutely anything goes. The fact that they have no money and no food for the pies, the most obvious thing in the world to her is to utilize those poor fellas coming down the chute. I mean, it would be ridiculous and stupidity not to, in her mind. It would be expedient to do so. She is a victim of the gutter. She is on the edge of the establishment. She's a have-not.
Right, now you use the word victim, and the social commentary part of this show shows that the Sweeney Todd, the murderous barber, mm-hmm. the demon of Fleet Street, and Mrs. Lovett, who bakes the victims into mm-hmm. pies, are victims, and it's their victimization that has brought them to all this mad murder.
Absolutely.
Now, is that something that you feel, in order to come across, can't be really tread on too much? Because, I mean, no one really pounds you over the head with the social commentary part
no.
of this. No. No one comes out and screams it out to you.
No, they don't, and it was never intended. I don't believe that until we read it in the paper, we weren't even aware of what kind of a social document we were turning out to be. People found it extremely relevant today to today's life. Well, obviously, if you're talking about the haves and the have-nots, absolutely, we're all aware of that. If we're not, we're not human. So, you know, as far as being an obvious commentary on our times, yes, it is, of every time in history, though.
It's another thing for me. I know, you know, you're siding with these murderers and going along with them, and every so often they become so mad or do something so terrible that you have to catch yourself and you have to stop yourself from, and it's just such an interesting response to go through, to be carried along and then have the door slammed on you and realize, no, they're mad.
Absolutely. Because you find yourself practically championing them, encouraging them in their dreadful pursuits. As you say, now, I think that door slam is one of the most original staging devices I've ever seen on the stage, and that was Hal Prince's idea. It's absolutely marvelous.
Your fans are used to, those who have seen you in MAME, seeing you as being like everybody's eccentric aunt, or who saw you in Gypsy as being the stage mother, but it's a prototype character. There's real references that we can go back to, and a lot of people know people like those characters. I doubt a lot of people have known people in their own lives who are a lot like Mrs. Lovett, the character.
I doubt it very much.
Do they react to you differently, your fans, when you meet them after a performance like Sweeney Todd, which isn't based on your neighbor or your family?
Well, yes. I know now who my true fans are. In other words, the ones who appreciate and understand what I'm doing in this show, they can tell me, they can articulate very well why they like it and why they like me doing it. They understand that Mrs. Lovett really is a culmination of a tremendous amount of experience that I've chalked up over all the years that I've been acting, from the time of Gaslight all the way up. Really, Nancy in Gaslight was the embryo of Mrs. Lovett, if you stop and think about it. So the work that I did then at the age of 17, added to by all the roles that I have managed to chalk up, as I said earlier, there's something you learn with every role you play. It adds just that little bit more color to that coat that you wear as a character actress, that coat of experience. Those moments you can draw on, memory, instinct, consciousness of how a person looks and acts, all of these funny little bits and pieces that we put together, actors, to create a whole character. Because when you're a character actress like me, playing Mame or Rose or Nellie Lovett, it's all the same in a sense. But obviously, people can't relate to Mrs. Lovett as easily as they can, as you said earlier, to Rose and to Mame. But the ingredients are different, but nevertheless, it's like a fantastic stew, you see. You put it all together. So the people who care and who've really watched me over all these many years can see suddenly this goulash in front of them there up on the stage, and they know where a lot of it came from. They know what I have drawn on to create Mrs. Lovett, and I'm delighted that they do, and they recognize the fact that it's an unusual character and that they feel that my work in it is unusual, which I'm very, very delighted about. Makes it very worthwhile.
When you go home from having played Mrs. Lovett in Sweeney Todd, or when you wake up the following morning after a performance, do you feel differently than you would after performing Mame or Gypsy, since this is such a darker piece of theater than the other two are?
Yes, I think one has one goes around with a different mood around your head, as it were, playing Mrs. Lovett. She doesn't carry with her the glamour of a Mame. I mean, when I walk down the street the next morning and I played Mrs. Lovett, people who are nice enough to recognize me will nod their heads, but they'll generally say, I haven't seen the show yet, but I'm looking forward, I'm going to come and see it. Never forget you in Mame. You know, they will always put another label on me, you know. And then when they've seen the show, they'll often say, saw the show, loved you as Lovett, you know. So that's nice too. But there's a certain glamour connected with playing glamorous roles, which as I say, sort of swims around your head like a mood.
My guest is Angela Lansbury, if you're just joining us, and she stars in the role of Mrs. Lovett in Sweeney Todd, which opened last night at the Schubert Theater. We've been talking a lot about some of the darkness and meanness of this, but as you've pointed out, there's some really funny moments in it. Let's go back to the cast recording and listen to one of the really witty songs that are in the show, and this is called A Little Priest. And again, why don't you set the context of this song for us?
Well, this song is the high moment at the end of the first act, when Nellie Lovett gets the idea of how to utilize or what to use the victims of Sweeney Todd's anger, because he can't get the judge. He decides he's going to carve up everybody. So everybody who comes to his barbershop has their throat slit, unless they have a family with them, and then he just gives them a rather close shave. So anyway, this song is a prelude to their decision to use the available, what should we call them, bodies.
Okay, let's listen to it. This is A Little Priest from Sweeney Todd.
That's all very well, but what are we going to do about the Italian?
Later on, when it's dark, we'll take him out of the trunk and bury him.
Well, yes, of course, we could do that. I don't suppose he's got any relatives going to come poking around looking for him. Well, you know me, bright ideas just pop into my head and I keep thinking. Seems a downright shame.
Shame?
Seems an awful waste. Such a nice plump frame, what's his name as? Ad, has, nor it can't be traced. Business needs are lift, debts to be erased. Think of it as thrift, as a gift. If you get my drift, no? Seems an awful waste. I mean, with the price of meat, what it is, when you get it, if you get it.
Huh.
Good you got it. Take, for instance, Mrs. Mooney and a pie shop. Business never better using only pussycats and toast. And a pussy's good for maybe 6 or 7 at the most. And I'm sure they can't compare as far as taste.
Mrs. Lovett, what a charming notion.
Well,
and a handy practical and yet appropriate as always. Mrs. Lovett, how I've lived without you all these years, I'll never know.
Think
how
about it. Lots of other gentlemen will soon be coming for a shame. Won't they think of
choice
all the
rest? Oh, what's the sound of the world out there?
What, Mr. Todd? What, Mr. Todd? What is that sound?
Those crunching noises pervading the air.
Yes, Mr. Todd, yes, Mr. Todd, yes, all around.
It's man devouring man, my dear. And who are we to deny it in here? Ah, these are desperate times, Mrs. Lovett. And desperate measures must be taken.
Here we are now, hot out of the oven.
What is that?
It's priest. Have a little priest.
Is it really good?
Sir, it's too good, at least. Then again, they don't commit sins of the flesh. So it's pretty fresh.
Awful lot of fat.
Only where it's at.
Haven't you got poet or something like that?
Now you see, the trouble with poet is how do you know it's deceased? Try the priest.
Heavenly. Not as hearty as bishop, perhaps, but then not as bland as curate, either.
Good for business, too. Always leaves you wanting more. Trouble is, we only get it on Sundays. Lawyer's rather nice.
If it's for a price.
Order something else, though, to follow, since no one should swallow it twice.
Have you any dean?
No, but if you're British and loyal, you might enjoy Royal Marine. Anyway, it's clean, though of course it tastes of wherever it's been.
Is that squire on the fire?
Mercy no, sir, look closer, you'll notice it's grosser.
Looks thicker, more like thicker.
No, it has to be grosser, it's green.
The history of the world, my love.
Save a lot of graves, do a lot of relatives' favors.
Is those below serving those up above?
Everybody shaves, so there should be plenty of flavors.
How gratifying for once to know that those above will serve those down below.
Now let me see. We've got Tinker.
No. Something pinker.
Taylor.
Paler.
Butler.
Sutler.
Potter.
Hotter.
Locksmith. Lovely bit of pluck.
Maybe for a lark.
Then again, the sweep, if you want it cheap and you like it dark. Try the financier, peak of his career.
That looks pretty rank.
Well, he drank, it's a bank cashier. Last one really sold, wasn't quite so old.
Have you any beetle?
Next week, so I'm told. Beetle isn't bad till you smell it and notice how well it's been greased. Stick to priest. Now, this might be a bit stringy, but then, of course, it's a fiddle player.
No. This isn't fiddle player. It's piccolo player.
How can you tell?
It's piping hot.
Then blow on it first.
The history of the world, my sweet.
Oh, Mr. Todd, what does it tell?
Is who gets eaten and who gets to eat.
And Mr. Todd, who gets to sell.
But fortunately, it's all so clear that everybody goes down well with me.
Marine doesn't appeal to you. How about Rear Admiral?
Too salty. I prefer General.
With or without his privates?
What is that?
It's fop. Finest in the shop. And we have some shepherds by peppered with actual shepherd on top. And I've just begun. He's a politician so oily, he'd serve with a doily of one.
Put it on a bun. Well, you never know if it's going to run.
Try the fryer, fry the dryer.
No, the clergy is really too coarse and too mealy.
The actor, that's compactor.
Yes, and always arrives overdone. I'll come again when you have judge on the menu. Have charity towards the world, my pet.
Yes, I know, my love.
We'll take the customers that we can get.
High born and low, my love.
We'll not discriminate great from small. No, we'll serve anyone, meaning anyone, and to anyone at all.
Angela Lansbury with Len Carew from the original cast recording of Sweeney Todd singing A Little Priest, and that's sung when the realization is made that all the victims could be baked into pies. Sweeney Todd is at the Schubert Theater. The official opening is Saturday night. It's in preview now. On Saturday, there will be a matinee at 2 and a show at 8, and Sunday a matinee at 3, and a new show has been added for Sunday evening at 8 o'clock, so you might want to make a note of that. Another thing I just want to mention, if you're interested in Sweeney Todd, George Hearn, who's playing the role of Sweeney Todd, will be here on Fresh Air next Friday afternoon at 2 o'clock. What are some of the scenes that you've gotten the most feedback from critics and from audiences?
I would say The Worst Pies in London, my opening stanza with two blockbuster songs, really, The Worst Pies in London and Poor Thing. I think I get my first initial very strong reaction with that, because it's a wonderful entrance in the first place, and musically it's so crazy and all stops out kind of thing, you know. I think it's probably the best introduction a character has had in a show for a long time. Then, of course, people love Priest. Have a Little Priest. I do say that that as the last number in the first act always gets a tremendous reaction.
What's your favorite moment?
I love singing by the sea. I really get a great kick out of that because I think it's because it shows a little of the underbelly of Nellie, which you don't really get a chance to get into. It's the only time she ever sings about herself. If you think about it, her songs are all kind of pyrotechnic nightmares, in a sense, which are also funny and so on, but they don't really tell you very much about the lady. And I think that's why I like... I love the ending of the show. I love the sort of almost operatic ending that where she and Sweeney go into a duet, a sort of death duet, you know, and suddenly start singing, shrieking almost, about things that have nothing to do with the fact that he's about to push her into the oven, you know. I think that moment, musically and dramatically, is rather thrilling, and it's terribly moving, I think. A lot of people find it quite distressing in a wonderful way, if you know what I mean. They react to it very strongly, and I love playing that moment.
Earlier, Angela Lansbury, you had said that you feel like your voice is the kind of voice that can withstand a lot of punishment. Is this a more punishing score than singing the score from Gypsy or Mame or anyone?
Oh, very much more so. Yes, because of the range that it requires. I'm going from the top of my range to the bottom. There isn't a note that I have that I don't use in this score. And mixing and matching registers is very taxing on the voice. Any singer will tell you that. And that's where I find I have the most, not difficulty, I don't have difficulties providing I look after myself terribly well.
I feel like I just want to offer my personal thanks to you for touring with Sweeney Todd, because it's such a fabulous opportunity to be able to hear and see you without having to travel to do it. I wonder why you are touring. Like, it's, I know, very, speaking of punishing, very difficult to be on the road. So,
well, it's a very well planned tour. But let's go back to the first part of your question. Why am I doing it? Because I really feel it's the most important piece of musical theater that's come along in a long, long time, and I want to bring it to the people of America. I don't want them to only see it if they come to New York. This is the confining thing about the theater, is that we can only play to a couple of thousand people a night, and it's not enough for all of the folk who would like to enjoy and participate in really first-class great musical theater, and I do believe that our show is. And it has been mounted as if it was a Broadway show, and it is mostly the Broadway cast. So I'm surrounded with the best possible adjuncts to bring the best possible musical theater to the country, and I'm happy to be doing it.
Do you have to work at keeping your role fresh, or does that just happen?
You can't really work at it, but you must concentrate. You must focus your energy and your thought about what you're doing when you're out there on the stage. It's awfully easy to go out and just run the tape. I'm sure you know what I mean by that. The role is set, the style is set, everything is there, but I could just flick a switch and go into that overdrive, but that's no good. The truth will out, and finally, all of that tape has to be imbued with fresh energy and fresh juices, and those are what I work to keep up and to keep them going. I'm fortunate in that I'm playing with a man who has infinite energy and enthusiasm for what he's doing, George Hearn, who plays Sweeney Todd. And he and I together, he is constantly up, and I'm a terribly energetic person myself when it comes to work. I can be an awful cabbage sitting around the house, but when I'm working, I'm really up there, and I really have this tremendous drive and energy and push, and so does he. So between the two of us, we really tear the stage apart, and that's great, because that's what's needed, that's what's required.
You have done a lot of films in addition to all your work in the theater. Do you have any preference, stage or
yes,
film?
I do. I mean, I love working in the theater first and foremost. There's nothing that can beat it. It does take an awful lot of time, and there are years of one's life when one is prepared to invest that time in the theater, and there are other times when you're not. This is my time now to be in the theater. I like to make the odd movie, and I have a new movie coming out, The Mirror Crack, the Agatha Christie story. Interestingly enough, it's coming out next week, in which I play an old lady. I play Miss Marple at the age of 75, and it's a switch, all right, from Nellie Lovett. But I enjoy doing it, but I was terribly glad. I was quite homesick for the theatre and homesick for Sweeney Todd.
What's so exciting about theatre as compared to films? Is it the rhythm at all, the chance to go through a whole performance?
That, but it's also the immediate response. You see, I can act till I'm blue in the face on camera, but I never really know whether what I'm doing is landing and whether it's effective and how I'm acting, whether I'm doing it well. That sounds awfully elementary, but it's much easier to gauge where your performance is going if you get an immediate response, instead of having to wait and go and see it in a little projection room, you know, all cut in little pieces. So, but anyway, I like to have a beginning, a middle, and an end to the work that I'm embarking on, and of course I can have that in the theatre, and I can never have that in a movie.
Well, good luck with your new film.
Thank you very
much. Next week, did you say?
Yes, I think it's coming out in Philadelphia on the 16th.
It's called The Mirror Cracked.
The Mirror Cracked. Mm-hmm.
Well, Angela Lansbury, we are out of time. It's been
enormously
wonderful to meet you. Thanks.
Well, Terry,
so
I've enjoyed myself. Thank you so much for inviting me on your show.
Thanks for coming. I've been speaking with Angela Lansbury, who's starring in Sweeney Todd, which is now playing at the Schubert Theater in Philadelphia. It's in preview now. It opens officially tomorrow night at the Schubert. There'll be a matinee at 2, an evening performance at 8, Sunday a matinee at 3, and a new performance has been added for Sunday, and that's an 8 o'clock in the evening performance for this Sunday. And again, if you're interested in hearing more about Sweeney Todd, George Hearn, who plays the role of Sweeney Todd, will be here on Fresh Air to speak with Danny Miller next Friday at 2 o'clock. Thank you again, Angela Lansbury, for visiting with us.
I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
It's a minute to 5, and we'll be joining All Things Considered from National Public Radio in a moment. First, I'd like to tell you what's coming up Monday afternoon on Fresh Air. At 2 o'clock, we'll be joined by the Philadelphia Inquirer's book editor, Rebecca Sinkler. And this Sunday, she'll be having her year-end wrap-up on the book page. We'll be talking to her about that and other things Monday afternoon at 2. And then at about 2:30 to 45, we'll be joined by Ted Solotaroff, who's a literary editor based in New York, and he's edited books by Tom Robbins and many others. So, and then the Marion McPartland series continues at 4 o'clock Monday afternoon, and Judy Stein, Fresh Air's arts reviewer, will be with us at 3:30. I hope you can join us then. Contributing to this afternoon's Fresh Air has been Danny Miller and Bill Van Wert. The technical director was Jay Goldman. Danny Miller is the associate producer of Fresh Air, and my name's Terry Gross. Thanks for listening. Have a terrific weekend. This is WUHY-FM in Philadelphia, listener-supported public radio.
Good evening. From National Public Radio in Washington, I'm Sanford Unger.
I'm Linda Wertheimer with All Things Considered.
I think, after 25 years, that white people are tired of the progress we've made. And I think we've caused it in some respect because we've been very braggadocious. They don't see us all as being suppressed as we did in 55.
25 years after the Montgomery bus boycott, a celebration and a self-examination. Also a reversal of the conviction of civil rights activists called the Wilmington Ten. Tonight on All Things Considered, Black Progress and Black Anger.
Also tonight, the leaders of the Warsaw Pact nations hold a surprise.